Flashback Twin Cities. I am Tom Osmond. Back again for another Saturday of memories and culture and history and media and everything else we can find in the next hour. James is with me as always. Good morning.
Good morning. How you doing, Tom?
These weeks go by very fast sometimes. Do you realize that? It just feels like we're just chatting a few hours ago. Here we are.
You know, that's just because I love this show so much.
I know you do. You're,
I do, actually. It's pretty great.
It's just the days we don't have it is tough. Now, in case you're ever sleeping there, James, I want you to realize, you know, you can check out the past episodes of Flashback Twin Cities on iTunes. You can search Flashback Twin Cities or KLBB, Tom Osmond, and you can see past. You can actually listen to past episodes, interviews. We had a great interview with Bob Bruce last Saturday.
Oh, I liked him.
Good conversation. We had Kirsten Lindquist on the week before. We had Dennis Felkin on. We had Andre Bernier, Sally Patrick. Some great interviews that we can relive again. And then 10 years from now, we'll play those again because it'll be flashing back to 2013.
Well, my absolute favorite part of last week's interview was the at the state fair talking about how children's toys are satanic and terrible.
Now, if you have any interest in that, either check out the podcast from last week or go to tcmedianow.com. You can check us out on Twitter at tcmedia. And I think that's all the plugging I can do with the website right now.
For now, anyway.
So I was someone close to me asked me a question, and I think that it's a fair question to talk to our audience about. This might be a generational cross question. Why don't people carry Sony Walkmans anymore? This is a legitimate question someone asked me. And I was trying to be sensitive in answering this question and trying to explain what an iPod was and what an iPhone was. But I did a little research, and the first Walkman came out in the year 1979. And do you know what the retail price of a Walkman was?
Oh, my goodness. I would guess $200?
That is a very good guess. It is $200 was the first.
Really?
You were right. I think you're checking my notes. That was the cost of a Sony Walkman in 1979. In 2013 dollars, because I did the inflation calculator, that would be $630.91 in 2013 dollars.
That's a little bit more. I mean, Walkmans are great, but that's a little more than I think I could pay for one.
Now, it might have been just the new innovators that were carrying those around. And the best part is you listen to the radio or you listen to 8 songs on the cassette you popped into it. So I was trying to explain to this person, the reason why we don't carry Walkmans anymore is you have about 8 choices of songs, the same cassette that would loop in over and over again. Or you go, say, a digital route and you listen to 500 songs.
But sometimes, you know, that's a little too much.
Let's listen to Sony's advertisement of the Sony Walkman. This was in 1983. They're trying to sell the Walkman.
Now you can lose inches off your waistline effortlessly. Thanks to the new Super Walkman from Sony, the world's smallest cassette player. And while you lose inches here, with Sony's sound, you won't lose a thing here. The new Super Walkman, indisputably the world's smallest cassette player.
The Super Walkman. I'm not sure that end music piece is right there, but that was the Super Walkman. That is a young lady in a headband doing some aerobics, probably the Flash Dance soundtrack. And the Walkman pretty much was better than any diet you could be on because you're so motivated to move and jump around.
Well, I'm absolutely impressed that I can lose weight effortlessly.
Effortlessly.
This thing is that good.
Well, for the price we were paying for them, I hope so. Let's listen to one more commercial from Sony Walkman just because I find these humorous.
Most people just see an empty box, but Sony saw something quite different. Sony introduces the only cassette player as small as a cassette case. The incredible-sounding Super Walkman.
Enter Sony's $25,000 sweepstakes. Look for this display at your Sony dealer.
The Walkman ended in 2010. It was reborn, though, as a digital device, much like the iPod or the Zune, or Samsung has one now, I think.
So the name Walkman still exists?
It still exists. It was gone for a little bit, and it came back.
So it was gone for how long?
According to this Sony fan website, and this is the internet, so I'm taking it all as, you know, take it for what it is.
As well as
it, 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 October 25th, 2010, it ceased to exist, and then a year later, it came back as a digital device.
Man, I can't even imagine the scramble that must have been taking place to try to make sure this thing stays alive.
It's amazing,
somehow.
Amazing it didn't get much press. Now, we have a big show today, and I needed to bring in an extra interviewer, a co-host today. I have Tom Ryther with me. Good morning, Tom.
How you doing, Tom? Good to be back.
Thank you for coming back. We have one of your former coworkers on today, Dr. Walt Lyons. You used to work with him at Channel 5 back when ratings were high and things were going really fun.
The times were good.
One of my all-time favorites. He revolutionized, I think, television meteorology and forecasting.
And you've been on TV a long time, well, a while before Dr. Walt came to town, and meteorology really was not a science at that point. It was more of a lot of pitchmen that were doing weather, and then, of course, Barry Zavan came and took some humor to doing the weather and found a great niche doing that. But really, it never really been a scientific part of the program.
Not really. I can remember when I broke into television in 1969 at KPLR-TV in St. Louis, Lee Cavanaugh, who was a major talent for the St. Louis area. He did the weather on our newscasts. He was a wonderful talent. And they had a cardboard map of the St. Louis area, and then they would have little makeup magnets, one of the sun, one of clouds, one showing raindrops.
Right.
I mean, it was so primitive. But it was an honor working with Lee Cavanaugh, but that truly was the beginning of it, but he got all of his stuff from the National Weather Service, which most of them did in those days.
Well, if you think about it, remember, our David Letterman was a weatherman before he broke into TV.
That's right,
TV.
And he was beaten out on a job here by Barry Zavan.
That's right. We could have had David Letterman do weather, and Barry could have been on the late night with Barry Zavan. Who knows what could have happened.
And he could have done it, too.
Did David Letterman do his weather with a lot of comedy, or was he a straight?
I think he did it with a lot of comedy, and the other one that was here's a little trivia for you guys. Who did weather in Nashville before they became big?
That's interesting. Who?
Pat Sajak. He was a
really
weather.
Well. I guess I'm not surprised. That's
I think he was in Nashville. I think he was in Los Angeles too. Mm-hmm. And I think that he was probably in the hallway, and they said, "Come on over and post this Wheel of Fortune game we have going."
Who did weather in Chicago for the NBC station with our friend John Bachman on the weekends? Shelley Long.
That's right, Shelley Long. That's right.
Used to be on MASH. Or not MASH, but Cheers. Cheers.
That's right.
Wow.
We'll take a quick break, and we'll be back with Dr. Walt Lyons. Flashback Twin Cities on KLDB 1220 with my co-host today, Tom Ryther, and we have a special guest on the line, Dr. Walt Lyons. Good morning.
And good morning to you.
Where are you calling from today, Walt?
Well, let me look out the window. Let's see, I'm sitting on our ranch out in Colorado with a 200-mile view of the Colorado Front Range, which desperately needs some snow.
You know, we just had a blizzard the last few days, so we'd be happy to send some over if we could find a way to do that. We're digging our way out of here.
We could use it. Actually, the ski areas aren't too badly off, but down on the plains, as you may have heard, we've been in a drought for the last 2 or 3 years here, and some idiot going in a pickup truck flicking a cigarette could set fire to the whole prairie here. So it's got us a little nervous, but, you know, that's the way weather affects people's lives, and that's kind of what I've been involved with my whole life, I guess.
Well, we want to talk about that today, and in case some of the listeners haven't noticed, you're not in Minneapolis right now. You're actually in Colorado on your ranch, and you've been out there for 10 years or so, a little over that?
Yeah, a lot more than that, 23 years.
Oh, wow, okay. And Dr. Walt Lyons came to KSDP in 1974, and if you could, Walt, just talk a little bit about how you got into broadcasting. You got a doctorate in meteorology. What made you want to go into weather broadcasting?
Well, oddly enough, I always wanted to be a disc jockey. I like radio. Radio, you know, it's like TV without pictures. And I enjoyed that. And when I got my undergraduate degree in meteorology, which was my other passion, when I went to St. Louis University, the home of the Billikens, and they had a TV station there, or excuse me, a radio station there, KBIL Radio, 590 on your dial. And so I just walked in one day and said, hey, can I do something here? And they said, sure. So they gave me a little show. I think it was about an hour on Saturdays, and it was called with the brilliant name of The Lion's Den. And, the station manager didn't pay too much attention to what was going on. He just thought we'd all be playing, you know, their sheet of music that they handed us, or here, play this. But he walked in one day, and I had just finished segueing Bo Diddley, Mahalia Jackson, and the Soviet Army Chorus.
Perfect.
Don't laugh, but it actually worked. It was a strange show. It was sort of pioneering the diverse music format. And so I always had a real interest in radio and media in general. And after I got my degree at the University of Chicago, my PhD degree, now there I worked with somebody whose name people might recognize, Dr. Ted Fujita.
Yes.
Of the Fujita Tornado Scale.
In case people don't know what that is, explain a little bit what the tornado scale
right.
is.
Well, it's now called the Enhanced Fujita Scale because they enhanced it. They've made some improvements. But the original problem was a tornado would go through. Sounds like I got to use one of my favorite jokes here. Once, the only time I ever made one of my news directors laugh was when I said on air, and a tornado went through Cleveland today and caused $2 million worth of improvements.
Oh, there you go.
Cleveland was in much worse shape then. But, you know, the point was tornadoes have a tremendous amount of impact and damage, but people would ask the next question, what was the wind? Well, normally, until recently, with the advent of tornado chasing, people weren't standing there with anemometers trying to catch the wind. So what Dr. Fujita did was try to look at the damage patterns and see, you know, what blew in, what blew off, you know, was the entire roof missing, were all the walls missing, was
right.
everything
right.
missing, and then work with engineers, a lot of engineers, particularly at Texas Tech, to sort of back calculate from the damage to a given type of structure what the wind had to be in the tornado.
Right.
And so that's certainly his big claim to fame. And his other claim to fame was that he was also a bit of an artist. I mean, his illustrations and papers and conferences were absolute works of art. I mean, they were beautiful. So if you worked with Ted Fujita, you had to be a pretty good presenter. And that's how I sort of, you know, got ramped up my presenting style at the conferences I went to, and then people got wind of the fact that, hey, I could talk and show pretty pictures, and then we got contacted by a headhunter, and suddenly there I am at KSTP.
So now you grew up in Brooklyn, correct, and ended up going to school in Chicago and St. Louis.
Right. Well, I was born in Brooklyn, but we moved out to Long Island, which is not that big a jump, but Nassau County, a little town called Floral Park. Mm-hmm. Every street was named after a flower.
And do you remember the first moment of Minneapolis? Had you been in Minneapolis prior to coming here for a job?
No, actually, the very first time I was in Minneapolis was when KSTP said, hey, we want to talk to you. And I said, really? I was rather puzzled, but I was so intrigued. I said, okay, we'll come up. And I remember flying in that very first afternoon and looking down and said, gee, this really looks like a nice place. And then went out to dinner with Ron Majors and the rest, they say, is history.
Well, and let's take a moment to think about this, and Tom, jump in here if you like. The year 1974, and you know, meteorology on TV really was not done by a scientific perspective. It was done a lot of it. If you look back at the 50s and 60s, it was done as almost an advertisement for you know, Bud Crayling did Tasty Bread, or you know, you pick your product, or it was done by weather girls. I think Nancy Nelson was one that, you know, passed the moon and the sun around on a big placard. So when you came to the Twin Cities, Walt, you were, from what I can tell, the first on-air meteorologist, and above all, you had the PhD to prove it. That was pretty pioneering.
Well, it was, and it was pioneering for PhDs, too. There was only one other person, actually, who I know who had a PhD, who went on did some TV out in Los Angeles, a fellow by the name of Bill Bonner. And he actually came out of the University of Chicago as well, by strange coincidence. But at that time, yeah, I mean, most of the people on TV were communicators, and they were, what's the phrase, Tom? Rip and read?
Yep, rip and, first of all, it's great to be talking with Walt. Walt,
yeah.
I haven't seen you since 1978. But it was a great pleasure meeting you. And it was, well, in the 4 years we worked together, I didn't realize you went to St. Louis. I was born and raised in St. Louis, and I was a Billiken fan.
Son of a gun.
But
we should be talking more.
No, without it. Well, I tell you what, you were one of my favorite people. He came in, Tom, and just he wowed all of us with his knowledge and his presentation, outstanding. And we built a heck of a team. We really did, with Ron Majors, Dr. Walt, and myself. Now, I'd worked with Lee Cavanaugh in St. Louis, who was commercial announcer. He was good. Barry Zavan, newest stuff. He was an Air Force meteorologist. But to me, Dr. Walt, when I worked with him in those 4 years, he just wowed me with his knowledge. And what a thrill to be talking with Dr. Walt again.
Well, let's listen. Let's take a flashback to 1977. Let's listen to what the newscast start might have sounded like.
Eyewitness News, the Northwest's most complete, comprehensive, and up-to-the-minute coverage with meteorologist Dr. Walt Lyons, sportscaster Tom Ryder, and Stan Turner for anchorman Ron Majors.
Good evening, everyone. In the headlines this Tuesday evening, Richfield adopts a new ordinance banning nudity in the bars.
And what a show that was that night. And Walt, you're on the map doing those last-minute changes before the news starts. I love the open. You see everyone's walking to the desk and shuffling the papers and talking about the day's news.
Yeah, and that wasn't just acting. We were furiously putting these things together. You have no idea how ad hoc live TV is. It still astounds me today, how we were able to put those shows together with so few screw-ups. Because, sometimes you go do tape something and you'll have 19 takes, before you get it right. But when you do it live, something else kicks in, and I'm not sure what it is or how we did it. But,
and you did this without teleprompters, too, correct? Without teleprompters, without...
None of us had teleprompters.
Right.
Walt, of course, knew what he was talking about. I knew what I was talking about, so did Majors. But we read off of a script, and Walt had notes. But I tell you, he dominated the weather audience.
Well, but did you just think how different things were then? I mean, we did use, we didn't even use that much in the way of green screen or chroma key. I mean, it was just what you see is what you get. And we were standing in front of big plasticine boards, and I have terrible handwriting, but I had to write down everything in magic marker ink. And all these weather maps were hand-drawn, mostly by me, and we did have a couple of really great people up in the weather office who made a few that they shot as studio cards. But, there was no computers whatsoever. There was computer graphics, what's that? That just did not exist in the weather business in 1974. The most advanced thing we had, which was actually a pretty good thing at KSTP, is we had one of the very first, next-generation radars, what they call the WSR-74 radar, which is, a professional class, weather service class radar. And we actually served as the backup for the National Weather Service in the Twin Cities on more than a few occasions. And so that was our big thing. But even then, the original one was black and white. So we had black and white radar with the little scan line going around. And
it looks like a World War II movie when you see, again, guest talking about Lyons and Tom Ryder. You see, and a couple of these videos have made their way to the digital age, and I've been able to find them, and there's not many that exist that I've been able to find yet. We'll find more. But in the weather portion of this particular broadcast, the arrow goes around, and it does look like you're watching a World War II movie. The ship's coming into bay. When you watch graphics today and you forget what it's like to watch them, 20 years ago, 30 years ago, it's quite a contrast.
I got a kick out of Walt's statement about Cleveland being improved after a tornado.
That's right.
Walt, do you remember in 1978 I left KSTP to go to work for WKYC, NBC-owned station in Cleveland? But I did get there after the fire at the Cuyahoga River was already put out. So things had improved somewhat.
I do a lot of things in my so-called retirement. I retired 5 years ago. Big deal. I'm now doing full-time research for the government for DARPA and NSF and what have you. So I'm hardly unbusy, but also I've been trying to collect all the various weather graphics and videos and things. I do a lot of shooting myself, and we've put them on the on a website. Can I give a shameless commercial
please
plug
do.
Here?
Yeah. Many times.
Yeah. People come and just poke around. We got up to 10,000 really cool weather videos, which you just go look at and push buttons and have fun. But it's called weathervideohd.tv. It's all one word, weathervideohd.tv. And Tom, if you go there and you click on Cleveland in the search term, it should bring up a picture of downtown Cleveland just about the time you were there, where you really couldn't see downtown Cleveland because of the smoke.
Well, that was basically the truth, that and the lake effect snows and what have you. But it was quite an experience. I went to Cleveland, spent about 2.5 years there, and then I missed my kids, and I came back to work. I was pretty lucky. I landed a job at what is now Care 11 TV. And but what a thrill it was working with you and Ron, because we took KSTP from the depths of the ratings to where they were really competitive, and then later years I got to work for Care 11 when we came from out of nowhere to become number one. But I'll tell you, Walt, right. Walt, you were as good as it got.
Let's talk about that a little bit, because both of you, the ratings, and keep in mind, this is, the ratings were 50% at 51 share.
Huge.
Back in 1974, 75, 76.
In fact, I think, if I can interrupt, didn't we have a 58 once, and wasn't that the all-time record?
I think that's exactly right. It was. They were advertising that on all of their information on their sales brochures, but I don't think any station in the country really did what we were very fortunate to do.
So both the gentlemen here, you're walking into work, you're on top of your game. What was that like? I mean, we all go through work, we all have our challenges and our good days and bad days. You guys are coming into work and you're doing everything that the bosses are telling you to do because the ratings and the money is proving it.
Tom, let me tell you this. I wanted to move on to work for NBC and see if I could cut it with a network-owned station and do some network stuff, which I did get to do. But I hated leaving Dr. Walt and Ron Majors. This was a great team.
Yeah.
The best team, you remember, Walt, you probably don't know this, but Minneapolis-St. Paul magazine selected our team as the very best ever in the history of Twin Cities television, and that came out in an article about 4 or 5 years ago.
Right.
I did not know that, but, you know, I'm going to have to agree with him, mainly because of the sports and the news. I mean, Ron was as good as they got in news, and you were pretty good in sports too there, weren't you, Ron?
Yeah, I hung in there. It was a simpler time.
Yeah, but, I mean, we had a chemistry. I mean, you know, I think a lot of, you know, happy talk news, I don't know if that phrase is still around, but, I mean, they used to talk about all the jocularity you're supposed to have on the set, but we were genuinely having a great time up there. I mean, it was very hard work.
I think it can't be faked. I think the viewers can see fake.
It wasn't.
Well,
we just... We just enjoyed ourselves immensely.
We really did. I mean, we would socialize together, the three of us, and just always had a nice time. It was a very natural thing, probably the best that I've ever been associated with.
So, Walt, you were able to grow the Department of KSP Weather Services pretty large by the time you left. It was one of the highest-staffed meteorology departments in the country, correct?
Yes, it was. And I mean, we had tremendous support from, you know, the Hubbard family there. I mean, they pretty much gave us a carte blanche to do it and to try and do it right. And, you know, by the time it was all over, we had a weather office that was probably as good as any, if not better than any in the country. Our technology was right up there with the National Weather Service, in some cases a little bit ahead of it. And, of course, we did work very closely with the National Weather Service. John Graff, if you might remember him, who was the head of the Weather Service at that time in the Twin Cities. And we worked very closely together. It was one night, I remember, it was in August of, I think, 78. And I came in and I went out for a real quick dinner because I knew severe weather was moving in. And I looked at the radar. And by that time, we'd colorized it, which was, again, another first. And then we'd animated it, which was, again, another first in TV weather, along with another fellow named Mike Smith down in Wichita. We were the two people to do it first. And I looked at that, and I said, oh, there's a very large red blob right over the Twin Cities. And I did some quick, you know, mental calculations. I'm saying, that means 8 or 9 inches of rain. We're in a flash flood. And about 2 seconds later, the Weather Bureau called. It was National Weather Service. They changed the name. But in any case, they said, we got a minor problem. I said, what's that? He says, we got 2 feet of water in our radar room. Which is, aside from being damaging, is downright dangerous. So they had to evacuate, and we were basically providing the radar coverage for the Twin Cities during a really severe flash flood. I mean, 494 was flooded. I mean, there were trucks floating under the bridges there, and it was a rough night. So we had the facilities to do things right and to help people out, and it was really the best operation I was ever part of. And we hired some very good people. I mean, one of those was Dave Dahl.
I was going to ask that.
Dave was an intern back in those days, right?
Young blonde guy, and I think that he's still around doing that weather. I think three
doing
times
an
a
excellent
week.
Job.
He is
too.
Doing a good job.
Yes.
I got to ask you a question. I used to go down to Arkansas and play golf quite a bit and go through Joplin, Missouri. And then when I saw what happened in that tornado down there, I'd never in my life seen anything like that. What in the world caused that? Why was it so bad?
Well, you know, making a tornado is just a matter of getting all the right ingredients, and there are many of them, you know, in the right place at the right time or is it the wrong time. And, I mean, very rarely does every factor that which, you know, influences a tornado come together at the same time. That particular situation was just like all of the stars lining up. I mean, I hate to use the perfect storm, you know, cliche, but it was from that point of view. And I mean, and the difference there was, compared to when I was doing weather at KS and CCO, that we saw that one coming 3 days in advance. We knew there were going to be an outbreak of these gigantic supercell tornadoes and that they would be of historic proportions. So even though we still don't have the ability to predict, you know, more than a few minutes in advance the exact path of a tornado, right, everybody knew a day before that someplace in southern Missouri, northern Arkansas, in that region was going to experience horrific, you know, EF5 class tornadoes, to use the Ted Fujita nomenclature. And, you know, every couple decades, you know, you get those stars aligning, if you will, and those kind of conditions. And the last time before that was in 1974. And, of course, the big concern is now with climate change, which is real, that we're pumping so much more energy into the system because the system is gradually getting warmer and wetter, that we're going to have more and more outbreaks like this, not only, and also more intense hurricanes and more extreme weather. And, I mean, it's not that we've never had these before, but it's just going to start happening more and more and more because there's just that much more energy in the system.
Well, what is causing climate change? I mean, I hear so many different things, but I want to hear it from you.
Well, my cynical answer is human stupidity. First of all, climate changes all the time. Climate is not a static thing. I mean, we reconstruct climate back for millions of years, and many things influence climate. Where the continents are shaped. I mean, they've been moving around for millions of years. The orbit around the sun, the axis of the Earth. I mean, there's many, many things which influence climate. But probably one of the strongest drivers is what we call the greenhouse gases. I mean, there's a reason why on the moon, when the sun goes down, the temperature drops to, you know, 400 below zero at night, is because there's no atmosphere. And when the sun goes down here, it might drop to 20 degrees above zero because we have an atmosphere which shields us, and particularly certain gases trap the heat, somewhat like a glass in a greenhouse. And if you start putting more and more of those greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, you trap more and more in the heat. It's just basic, simple thermodynamics. There's no way around it. And we've been pumping tremendous amounts of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. And as early as 1890, a Swedish scientist predicted we were going to basically start turning the planet into a greenhouse. And sure enough, wow, the temperatures have been rising steadily and steadily and steadily, so that, you know, sure, you have natural fluctuations and you have warm periods and cold periods, but it's more than a coincidence that the 10 warmest years in recorded history have occurred since 1997.
Let me ask a question, and then we'll talk about something lighter, because I don't want to put you in the spot here to do a lecture to us, which you should be paid much money for. But is the population in the world causing this? Because you look at how, you know, we can prevent, and we have to be responsible to our Earth. But in the world population, which keeps expanding at a rapid pace, Is just by the way we populate going to accelerate climate changes or to the greenhouse effects, as you mentioned?
Well, I mean, yeah, more people mean more pollution in the broad sense, but it doesn't have to be that way. I mean, more Americans would be an absolute disaster because we're 5% of the world's population. We pump in about 25% of the carbon dioxide. Mm. So, I mean, if everyone becomes like Americans, we're headed for an absolute catastrophe. We have to become like more of the rest of the world. Who are learning that you have to be energy efficient, you have to use energy wisely. Surely, I mean, there are times and places for fossil fuel and even nuclear. Nuclear can be done right, I believe. But, I mean, we have to use our renewables. We have to use wind. We have to use solar. We're building a new house, and there are going to be solar panels on it. So we can reduce our burdening of the atmosphere with CO2. We have to, because all the CO2 we've put in already is going to take 1,000 years to go away. I mean, so even if we stopped emitting anything, we'd be at our current elevated state, which is very, very dicey.
Well, I recall when I was in school and watching you in the news, you were talking about acid rain before anyone else was, and you were doing reports on acid rain and doing reports on pollution. This is back in the early 80s. So I think that as a population, we're getting better at it, but I would agree with you that we do have a long ways to go to being energy efficient and to taking the earth for what it is.
But you're absolutely right. Acid rain was a big topic, but guess what? We've controlled the sulfur dioxide emissions from power plants, and acid rain is no longer a major problem. The ozone hole around Antarctica was a terrible problem. We controlled the release of these perfluorocarbon chemicals, and now the ozone hole over the South Pole is healing. So we can make these problems, but we can also, find ways to prevent them and address them, and that's what we have to do as a society. And it can be done cost-effectively. It's going to require some thinking, some sacrifice, some change in lifestyles, but it can be done. And frankly, it has to be done.
Let's take a quick break. We'll be back with Dr. Wald Lyons and Tom Ryther. This is KLBB 1220. Flashback Twin Cities, Tom Osmond on KLBB. Club 1220, I'm with Tom Ryther, my co-host today, and Dr. Wald Lyons on the phone from Colorado. And Walt and Tom, both of you, I'm sure had a lot of inquiries when you were number one. You were having 58 share ratings to go to bigger cities and different places, and both of you guys took offers to go other places. Tom went to Cleveland, and Walt, tell me a little bit about your story.
Well, I actually turned down the Today Show.
Really?
Yeah. It was interesting. Some guy named Brokaw called me, and first I was so surprised I wasn't quite sure what to say. But then I said, "We want you to come and do the Today Show." Blah blah blah. But then I just looked around at what I had, with the radar and the great crew of people we had there, and I said, no, thank you very much, but I just don't think. I can't do what I want to do, which is basically, I enjoyed doing, the outreach part. I mean, that's really why I was doing the weather, in a sense. It was scientific education, public outreach, as we call it right now. Because all the time that I was in media, I was working full-time day jobs as a science researcher. So media was always my night job. And So I was writing papers, doing contracts. I was at the University of Minnesota working at the aerosol lab there, doing air pollution research, things of this type. So I basically said no. But later we were contacted by WLS in Chicago. And there I kind of had to say yes because I love Chicago. I mean, it was sort of my second hometown. And it was a chance to get back into, an environment that I knew very well. And so I weighed it very carefully and flipped and flopped in my own mind for quite a while before finally accepting it. So I moved on to WLS for a few years, and as people like Paul Douglas can tell you, sometimes you go to Chicago and sometimes you come back.
Right.
It's a rough market.
Hey, Walt, you're going to get a kick out of this. When I left for NBC in Cleveland, WKYC, guess who my weather guy was there? Al Roker.
Oh, you're kidding. Really?
That's a fact. He was sort of a beginner. Nice guy.
Yeah.
I used to take the trolley, go out to Shaker Heights, and have dinner with Al and his family. But I've been pretty lucky to work with the likes of you, and Al was a great guy, and of course Paul Douglas. I've been a lucky guy to have been in your company.
I look back. I mean, I've worked in a number of television stations over the years too, and I really have to say the KSTP years and the CCO years were just terrific. People sometimes think, if you're in media, you're all stuck up and you have a big opinion of yourself. I find that is generally not at all true. I think most people who work in the media sort of understand that they're in a kind of an unusual and special position.
Especially in Minneapolis, we take you guys as family. So that's the reason why my website does what it does and the reason why we're doing this.
Tom, I'm going to let you in on a secret. Walt Lyons not only knew what he was talking about, He was and still is, I can just tell, a fun guy. I mean, Walt, you were eccentric, but you were funny, and I don't know.
Well,
those were happy years.
Let's listen to some of that humor here, shall we? Let's listen to a clip from CCO in 1985.
Oh, dear.
If you happen to be with us yesterday, perhaps, just perhaps, you remember this brave prediction.
Tomorrow, the color of fall will not be gray around here. It will be blue with some white puffy clouds and a lot of pretty colors on the tree.
Oops,
well,
is right.
You know, I saved my lunch bag, and I thought maybe, Walt, you might want to wear this, try to live down that forecast.
Well, haven't
you
heard?
Put it over the head, you know?
You haven't heard.
Haven't heard what?
The most remarkable thing happened. Yesterday, I took the day off, and you know that some guy got in here last night, and we had an imposter doing the weather. This is the most remarkable thing. This is not me. It's a remarkable resemblance. The mustache turtles down a little bit more, though. I don't know who this clown is, but he probably got the forecast out of the Farmer's Almanac, because right here it says today is going to be sunny and warmer. Boy, you know, if you're going to cut in on the show, at least do
Your
it
twin
right.
brother came and did a wrong forecast. Now, Walt, you never gave wrong forecasts out.
Well, I think they were wronger more often then than they would be today. The technology has improved so dramatically that, I mean, people are actually surprised today when the forecast is wrong. So, I mean, there's been some amazing developments in the science since I've been part of it. So
well, tell me a little bit about the difference between, so you worked in Minneapolis, number one, and you go to Chicago, a great opportunity. Your bosses didn't really want you to leave. They wanted you to stick around for a while, but you go to Chicago. And what was the difference between doing weather here in Minneapolis and Chicago?
Well, that was actually a pretty good weather operation, too, because, you know, John Coleman was there, and he was, you know, he'd sort of done a lot of pioneering things in weather presentation, too. So, I mean, I can't say that there was a huge step down in technology, although as part of my contract, I did bring in some toys. We had better radar displays and, you know, lightning detectors and things of that type. So, you know, we tried to bring the technology with us, but the people at WLS were wonderful. I mean, Joel Daly, Faye Flynn, names maybe in the Twin Cities they don't recognize, but they're, you know, they're legends in the Chicago area. But it's kind of a tough market. I mean, it's extremely competitive. We had very good people on the other channels. There was a fellow there named Harry Volkman, mm-hmm. who was and is a legend. I mean, he was a meteorologist and very good and extremely likable, very affable person, and love him dearly. And so, I mean, there's a lot of competition. So then the consultants come in, and, you know, they don't like the way your mustache curls either or something like this. And, you know, it let's put it this way. There's a lot of churning in the talent in the major markets. And whether or not it's all based on your performances is questionable. It's sometimes more what the consultants tell the management they should be doing.
So. Hey, Walt, I have to ask you a question. Was Jeff Hendrickson working for WLS Radio at that time? Does that ring a bell?
Vaguely.
Big, deep voice. Reason I ask that, I hired him for WIBV Radio in Belleville, Illinois. I was driving along one day, and here was Jeff's big, booming voice coming out of a station in Highland, Illinois. I drove there, and we brought him to Belleville, and he became a big name for WLS Radio in Chicago. So I didn't know that Walt had moved on to WLS because that was after I left.
Right, right. Yeah. And Walt, you couldn't stay away from Minneapolis too long, so you're back at CCO about 1980?
80, 81, yeah.
And did the weekends there, and talk to me a little bit about that changeover. You'd done, you know, the 5 day a week, you know, evening weather. But I guess from what you've told me, this was your evening job anyway. So you're just working Saturdays and Sundays compared to Monday through Friday.
Yeah, because at that time, you know, I've always been a full time, you know, science researcher and consultant, and we were sort of embarked on a really major project. It was putting together the National Lightning Detection Network, which sort of a next generation of that is what you see on TV today. So we had our offices in the Minnesota Supercomputer Center, and I was working, you know, 90-hour weeks. That was Monday through Friday. And then, I still wanted to keep my hand in the media. So, I mean, the weekend was really about all I could do. I just didn't have the time to do everything. So I just had a nice 8 day week, basically, is what it boiled down to. So.
And you were at CCO, I think, for 8 years, almost double what you were at Channel 5.
Yeah, 8 years. I finally just said, well, 8 day weeks are getting a little old, so in 1988, basically, we hung it up. And, Yeah, I miss the people there, and I miss doing the job, but I honestly not sure I would want to go back and do more TV at this point.
So you don't miss the camera, the lights, the makeup, the adrenaline that you get before you go on the air?
Well, I'm on the other side of the camera now. I produce science videos, and like I say, we have a royalty-free weather video service, which you know provides imagery for producers and educators and people like that. So I like being, I'm still in the media in a sense. I see a lot of my clips showing up on Discovery Channel and the Weather Channel, things like that. But it's kind of a different aspect of it.
Do you get a lot of contact from people that used to see you here in Minneapolis or Chicago or other markets you worked in?
Yeah, surprisingly. Well, I do get letters from time to time from people who are, part of our KSTP Weather Observer Network. Do you remember that, Tom?
Absolutely. Yeah. That was a forerunner.
Yeah, that was really, we were about the first people, actually, I think the first station that did that on such a major scale. We got about 25 different families from around the greater, the metropolitan area there, and they supplied them with equipment, temperature, shelters and rain gauges and thermometers, and they called in faithfully every day, with the high and low temperature, the snowfall, the rainfall, and we got that right on the air, and, we could show, I remember back when people were talking about the coming of the next ice age, climate fashions change, this was about 1976, I think that winter was. We could show, right there using our observer network that downtown at KSTP, right there in the Twin Cities, the Minneapolis-St. Paul borderline there, it was 24 below. And that was the warm spot. As you go out, it got to 30 below, 40 below, and up by Stillwater, it's like 59 below. So we could just show right there on the evening newscast what is called the urban heat island. And, that's probably one of the most extreme examples I've ever seen. But,
well, I used to enjoy when you used to use the radar to find Santa Claus on Christmas Eve. I used to use the technology to find where Santa was coming in from. That was a
Walt's never going to admit this, but one of the highlights of his career, he got to watch me do bowling for dollars.
That's right.
You remember that show?
Well, who could forget that?
It was a crazy show, but I tell you what, it had high ratings, that's for sure. I could never figure out why, but it did.
Well, it's a good thing I wasn't on it because my high game's 122.
Well, that's better than mine.
I keep waiting to find the video of a cameo from Ron or Walt on Bowling for Dollars, but I've not found it yet.
Yeah, I mean, there are some shows I wish we had. Like, I remember more than a few times Ron Majors would do the show wearing shorts.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
Oh, yeah, sure. On a hot day. But you couldn't because they had a full shot on you. I had shorts on many a night, too.
But we tried so many ways to make him have to stand up.
Yeah, right, right.
To expose him to the world. There's a lot going on there.
So much insight we find out in Flashback Twin Cities. So much inside information that now we have this imagery now in our minds now. So I appreciate both of you guys for giving us that. Walt, tell us a little bit about what you're doing. You're doing videos. You're doing consulting. You're doing you're retired, but it sounds like you have a full-time job.
Yeah, I mean, this retirement stuff is really overrated. Basically, I've been working for the last 20 years on lightning research, but a special kind of lightning is called sprites. And actually, there's a Minnesota connection there. Back when I was still at CCO, or just after I left it, I guess, a professor at the University of Minnesota, Professor Jack Winkler, made sort of an inadvertent observation with a sort of a low-light camera, one of these night vision-type cameras, where he saw a gigantic plume of light stretching tens of miles above a thunderstorm. And no one had ever seen that before. No one knew what it was. But I was also working with NASA, and they were kind of concerned that it would impact the space shuttle. So we got involved in that research, and finally in 1993 out here, once we moved to the prairie where we can really see the thunderstorms hundreds of miles off, we used the same cameras and documented these things occurring from all sorts of storms, and that's actually started a whole new field of science called sprite research, and it's related to lightning, and it's really exciting, and there's new discoveries being made every day. So that's sort of kept me out of trouble and off the streets for the last 20 years.
Well, I'll make sure you're off the streets. And again, so 23 years you have not been in broadcasting, but the last year you were on Channel 4 was a big year here in Minnesota. Again, my guest, Dr. Walt Lyons, with Tom Ryther. The Twins won their first championship in 1987, and I want to play some audio. This was fun. You used to do a lot of little bits on before the weather, and this is one of my favorite ones here.
We're sitting here with our long faces. We don't get to go over to we don't get tickets, but I do happen to have,
of course, the now world-famous Homer hanky, but I thought if there's another use for this.
Oh?
Yes, the Cardinals crying towel. I hope they get to use them. What can I say? We're probably in the least exciting spot in the world right now.
We are.
Yeah, I mean, in the studio, it's just nuts outside. I grew up in Brooklyn when the Dodgers were there and finally beat the Yankees, and this is more exciting than that, let me tell you. And the gloom of early this morning has given way to bright blue skies this afternoon. Sort of.
I think one also had the Plato Cardinal Walt, who smashed right on the air, and I'm trying to find that tape. It's around here somewhere.
I think it was in that newscast. This is the seventh game for which my wife had tickets, and I wasn't able to go. And anyways, I think I stood there right in the middle of the newscast and stopped and said, is there anybody actually watching this show right now?
I think you and Debbie are the only ones watching the monitor, I think, that was going on that day, I think.
No, I never heard from the news director, so he probably wasn't. So.
You know, I didn't realize this, but I guess when I had come back to Care 11, that Walt was sort of a competitor, although Walt was doing weekends.
Right, right.
You know, well, I miss seeing you. Doggone it, next time you're in town, why, we have to go out and have a cold one. That's Pepsi, that is.
That's right. We want a Pepsi, yes, family show. Walt.
Absolutely, but, you know, I would like to thank Tom for all the work he has done to putting together, basically, this archive online. I can go back and see what I used to look like. Boy, have I gone downhill. But, I mean, you have some wonderful clips on there of Tom and Ron and myself and all sorts of other people, Dave Moore, and, you know, it's really great, I think.
Well, I appreciate your confidence in sending me your tapes. We talked, and you said I have some tapes, and you sent me a box, then you sent me some more. So I appreciate your confidence, and it was great to go through those. And, you know, these tapes, and I think you can appreciate this, they have to be preserved. And to anyone listening, if they have videotapes of the ball games from 87 or 91 or some event, you know, make sure you keep those in a good spot and digitize those, because there's a lot of history to be seen on those.
You know, Walt, when I met Tom several years ago, he wanted to know if I had any old tapes. So I went out into my garage, and I had boxes and boxes, and I thought, who in the world cares? But Walt's exactly right. Tom, you have done a great job. He went through all my tapes and dug up stuff of the things that not only did what Walt and Ron and I did, but he has done a good job and brings back a lot of great memories.
Well, tcmedianow.com, and Walt, give us your website again in case anyone wants to see what you're doing.
Oh, yeah, if you want to watch some great time-lapse video of clouds and things and other exciting stuff, it's Weather Video HD, all one word, weathervideohd.tv. That's another domain. You can also use .com, but weathervideohd.tv.
Great. And hopefully, Walt, next time you're in town, you'll come, and maybe we'll have you in studio, and we'll talk for another hour. We'll do part two.
Yeah, we could talk. We have plenty of more shenanigans we could talk about.
No, we had fun. I mean, like Walt is a brainiac, but he was fun. We truly did love working together, all of us.
That's great. Well, thank you, Walt, and thank you, Tom, for co-hosting today. Walt, take care, and we'll be in touch soon.
Thank you.
Well, Tom, we got to co-host today, Flashback Twin Cities.
Well, that was fun. Jeff, total.
I like to do surprises. Walt was surprised you were on today, so I think we'll have to let's get a list and get more people you work with, and we'll start calling them on Saturday mornings. James, do you learn some weather facts today?
I absolutely did. In fact, I very much liked our second segment there. That was pretty great.
And I think the one fact that you took away with today is news anchors may wear shorts on the air. This is the one fact I'm now going to have to take the image out of my mind tonight. But.
That was no joke, though, when you said, now I'm imagining all of this.
That's right.
Every single time I see the news.
This is Flashback Twin Cities, KLBB 1220.